Hare Krishna. I thought we could read this evening from a very profound section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which Prahlad Maharaj, the great devotee of Lord Narasimhadev, offers his heartfelt prayers into the lotus feet of Lord Narasimha. It's not a very often studied section of Bhagavatam, but you'll see that the prayer is very profound. In a certain section of this material world known as Harivarsha, Prahlad Maharaj resides along with his followers, and they worship the Lord in the form of Narasimhadev. And his prayers are very purely motivated. That's the essence of it. So we can begin with this is Canto 5, Chapter 18, entitled The Residence of Jambudvip, Offer Prayers, and we'll begin with text number 9. But first, let's invoke auspiciousness by Mangalachana. So please repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. That means, may there be good fortune throughout the universe, and may all envious persons be pacified. May all living entities become calm by practicing bhakti yoga, for by accepting devotional service, they will think of each other's welfare. Therefore, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence, Lord Sri Krishna, and always remain absorbed in thought of Him. Srila Prabhupada has written a nice report on this verse, commentary. I'll read segments of it. He says, just like a desire tree, a Vaishnava can fulfill all the desires of anyone who takes shelter at his lotus feet. Prahlad Maharaj is a typical Vaishnava. He prays not for himself, but for all living entities, the gentle, the envious, and the mischievous. He always thought of the welfare of mischievous persons like his father, Hiranyakashipu. Prahlad Maharaj did not ask anything for himself. Rather, he prayed for the Lord to excuse his demoniac father. This is the attitude of a Vaishnava, who always thinks of the welfare of the entire universe. Om Jnana Timarantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Viritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Mukam Kuruti Vachalam Angam Lankhayate Girim Yatrapatam Aham Vande Shri Gurun Dhinatharam. Once I was in Kashi, Banaras, on the bank of the Ganges River, and along the ghats there on the bank of the Ganga, there are so many small shrines to so many different devatas, demigods, the Supreme Lord, great saints. So I noticed that there was one man who was going from one shrine to the next, all the way from one end of the river to the other, along the whole waterfront. So I saw that he was ardently absorbed in praying. So I was curious, and when he came to where I was standing, I just asked him, what are you doing? He said, I'm doing puja. And he said, I'm not doing puja worship for for myself, but I'm praying for the welfare of the entire universe. So, how many of us, when we come to the temple or the church or the mosque, how many of us actually pray for others? Most of us, some of us pray for others. Most of us pray for ourselves or for our immediate family, for what we feel we need. But actually, the more advanced one becomes in spiritual consciousness, the happier one becomes, and the more he can think of others. The less we can think of others, it means the more problems we have to unravel for of our own. So we don't really have the peace of mind or the time to worry about anyone else. But a great devotee like Prahlad, he's really, his only engagement is to help other people, because for himself, he's fine in pure devotional service. So, Srila Prabhupada cites the commentary of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, one of the great acharyas, on this verse. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he says that he's praying for the welfare of the entire universe. Now, those of you who know the story of Prahlad Maharaj, he was tormented by his father, who was also engaged in harassing other devotees as well. Brahmins, Vaishnavas, cows, these groups have to fear from the demoniac elements that are always there in human society. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, actually all the acharyas commenting on this chapter, they all raise this rhetorical question. If we're praying for the welfare of the entire universe, and we're praying for that they all be auspicious, in effect, it seems as if we're praying for the empowerment even of those demons who are harassing the Vaishnavas and the Brahmins and the cows and others. So how should we understand this? He answers his own question by pointing out the next word that he says, Kala prasidatam. May all the envious persons be pacified. He has to qualify like that. And then he tells us how that can happen, what the symptom will be. In this material world, generally everyone is very nice externally. We smile and we're very polite, we're very careful to consider others' needs in ordinary transactions. But within our hearts, we're actually competing with everyone around us. And if anyone becomes too influential and interferes too much in our own circle of influence, then we become very concerned. Why is that? Because actually we're all envious. So we are the ones that he's talking about when he says, Kala prasidatam. May all the envious persons be pacified. We are also envious. The symptom of being non-envious is that we can think of each other's welfare. Jayantu bhutani shivam mito dhya. Many, many times in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna uses one stock phrase that he repeats quite a bit. He says, Sarva bhuta hite rataha, being always engaged in the welfare of other living beings. This is the hallmark of a non-envious person. And Krishna describes this also in chapter 18 of the Bhagavad Gita, when he's describing the symptoms of a person who's liberated, the symptoms of someone who is absorbed in spiritual consciousness. He says, Brahma Bhuta prasannatma anashochitina kamshati samasarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. When we understand the nature of spirit, and when we identify ourselves only as spirit, then there are some symptoms that are evidence of that realization. What are the symptoms? Nashochiti. We don't cry, we don't whine and complain, we don't hanker, nakamshati. We don't feel envious of others. Because if we want to blame everyone around us for our sufferings, that's called shoshati. And if we want to hanker after things that others have instead of us, then that's called kamshati. Another word for it is envy. So, na shochiti na kanshiti, if we are free from these two poles, then automatically we get the other symptom, which is samasarvesha bhuteshu. We can see all living beings equally. And when we see all living beings equally, in other words, when we don't see any friends or any enemies, we don't see anyone who has something that we might exploit, for example, nor do we see anyone who might pose a potential threat to us, then we can see everyone equally on the spiritual platform. And Krishna says, in that stage, one gets real devotion, pure devotional service unto me. Madhbhakti labhate param. So we are practicing Krishna consciousness to some degree. We're practicing spiritual life to some degree. We may be chanting Hare Krishna also. But it's really more of a process of probate bhakti. Probate bhakti means we don't really have this qualification of being entirely liberated from the influence of Maya, the material world. But we're trying to do something, and under the sponsorship of a pure devotee, our service may be accepted. But we should keep this in mind. And then he goes on in the third line of this verse. He describes how it is that we can only think of each other's welfare without any envy. He says, manascha bhadram bhajata dadhokshaje. May the mind become auspicious. This is the second word we had in this verse for auspiciousness. The first one is swasti. This one is bhadram. So what does it mean? Some of the acharyas commenting on this verse said that the word bhadra means nishkama, without desire. Others say it means to be non-envious. Either way, bhajata abhokshaje, it comes from worshipping the transcendental Lord. The transcendental Lord. What does abhokshaje mean? Atha akshaje. Something that is perceptible to our senses is called akshaja, born of our sight, born of our hearing, born of the sense of touch, etc. You cannot grab the Supreme Lord in that way. He remains ever elusive. The senses are not sufficient to perceive God on their own without His mercy. Therefore, His name, another name of God is Adhokshaja. He pushes down this, the status of this method of gaining knowledge. Akshaja knowledge is pushed down by Him. You have to approach Him on His terms. Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samadrata. If we are unwilling to adopt His terms for perceiving Him, then He will remain elusive forever. So the beauty of this verse is that it hints, at least, that by worshipping that Supreme Lord, our minds become peaceful. Bhadram, another meaning of the word bhadram, is peaceful. When our minds are peaceful, then we can possibly think of someone else. As long as we're agitated by our own desires or by our own miseries. Desires and miseries, these two things, they batter us in this material world. Desire means the world of bhoga, or the world of karma, the world of pseudo-exploitation. And jnana means the world of escape, or the world of liberation, the world of trying to flee from the reactions of the mess that we ourselves have created through our karma. So these two things we get in this material world, we get either bhoga or tyaga. Tyaga means renunciation or escape, as he said. A person who has any tendency for these things, he cannot be peaceful. But a Krishna bhakta can be. Chaitanya Charitamrita states very nicely in Bengali language, bhukti mukti siddhi kami shakale ashanto. Krishna bhakta nishkama daiva shanto. That means that somebody who's chasing after material sense gratification, sense enjoyment, material enjoyment, that person cannot be peaceful because he'll be agitated until he gets it. And a person who is seeking to escape from his karma as it results from that process, he's also not peaceful because until he gets peace, he remains agitated. We were talking about this the other day. That's why Buddhism is so popular nowadays, because We lead such a pungent lifestyle in the modern world that we just need some time out after some time. And the Buddhists call that nirvana. Snuff out the lamp for a while. People just, their highest conception of happiness would be just to snuff out the miseries of material existence. And even yogis were seeking after mystic cities. One time, I was in Haridwar, and I saw a big crowd of people on the bank of the Ganga. So I went to see what it was. There was a yogi, and a big crowd of people was standing around him. And he had a Limca bottle, he had a soda pop bottle in his hand, and he went like this. He just pushed it into a pile of powdered glass, and he poured it out. And everybody was wowed by that. So this is called Mystic City. For what reason one might want to do that, I don't know, other than to attract a crowd. But that's what he was doing. He, no doubt, engaged in long discipline in order to gain that talent. But these persons also are not satisfied until they get what they want. Everybody wants something. Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Adaiva Shanta. A Krishna Bhakta doesn't want anything. This is not easy to understand. Krishna Bhaktas don't want anything. We just made some announcements and we just made some requests. It looks like we want some things also. But the devotee accepts desire. That's not a problem. Desire is in fact the characteristic of the living being. You cannot stop desiring any more than you can stop acting. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, sharira yatra vijatena prasithera pranana. If you remain inactive, you can't even pay your bills. So you have to remain active, you have to fulfill desires, you have to remain engaged somehow. But the secret of Krishna consciousness is that although we remain absorbed in activities, we remain absorbed in feelings, we remain absorbed in even desires, they're not our desires. This is the point. When Krishna tells us what he wants, and we try to absorb ourselves in what Krishna wants, then we become peaceful, because God's desires cannot be frustrated, unlike ours. Raise your hand if you've never, ever been frustrated. Yeah, everybody's been frustrated, so you know what I'm talking about. But Krishna doesn't lose. Yatra yogeshwaro Krishna, yatra partho dhanantara, tatra shriya vijayo bhutir thruva nitya matima. In the end of Bhagavad Gita, it's stated, wherever Krishna is there, there's going to be victory, there's going to be morality, there's going to be so much success in general. Okay, so, manashta bhadram vajatara bhokshaje. When our minds become peaceful by engaging in devotional service to the Supreme Lord, and when we become deeper and deeper absorbed in that process, then nahamatirati ahaitati, our minds become unmotivated. The word ahaitati is glossed in a few ways by the acharyas commenting on this verse. Sridhar Swami and also Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, they say that the meaning of the word ahaitati is nishkama sati. We've already mentioned the word nishkama, to be without desire. What does ahaitati literally mean? Koi hetu nahi. Hetu kama lo kya hai. Hetu means a motive, an agenda, some sort of purpose, you see. But a devotee doesn't have any purpose in adopting Krishna's desires. See, his only purpose is to please Krishna. So that's also called nishkana in the Bhagavad Gita. Srila Viraragava Acharya of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, Vijayatvachitirtha of the Madhva Sampradaya. They say the same thing in slightly different words. They say it means palabdhi sandhirahita, without being attached to any particular fruit or result of your activity. Whatever you're doing, usually you have some goal in mind. This is called strategic planning. And everybody has this kind of hetu, or this kind of phala in mind. Phala means fruit. So to be devoid of that. So we've discussed already the way that we can do this is by becoming absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Now, in text number 12 of the same chapter, he concludes his prayers with another very famous verse. He says, Yes, yasti bhaktir bhagavat yakinchana saravai gunais tatra samasate suraha harauva bhaktasya karo mahatmana manorathena siddhavato bahi. All the demigods and their exalted qualities, such as religion, knowledge, and renunciation, become manifest in the body of one who has developed unalloyed devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. On the other hand, a person devoid of devotional service and engaged in material activities has no good qualities. Even if he's adept in the practice of mystic yoga or the honest endeavor of maintaining his family and relatives, he must be driven by his own mental speculations and must engage in the service of the Lord's external energy. How can there be any good qualities in such a man? When I first read this verse, I thought, my God, that sounds like an utterly sectarian statement. Devotees are very good, anybody else is very bad. That's essentially what we're hearing. But there is a science to it, or as Shakespeare would say, there's a method to the madness. And we've already explained somewhat. Here the word is used, akinchana. And the Acharyas commenting on this verse, they say that akinchana means very much the same thing as the word ahaitaki in the previous verse. Akinchana means nishkama, without any desire. Or according to Sanatana Goswami, it means Nishkinshana Shuddhava. It means either having nothing or it means being pure in one's intentions. So in this way, we see that the real way to become full of all good qualities and the real way to become peaceful at heart, the way to become a saintly person is to become selfless. And how do you become selfless? You can't just give up desire altogether. You can't stop acting altogether. You adopt the desires of Krishna as your own. That's called kaivalya in bhakti language. Oneness of purpose. And when we do this, when we adopt this selfless attitude and serve the interests of the Lord, then we ourselves manifest His qualities as well. Srila Prabhupada has written about this in his purport. He says, Krishna is the original source of all living entities. All living entities are part and parcel of Krishna, and therefore when they revive their original Krishna consciousness, they possess all the good qualities of Krishna in a small quantity. When one engages oneself in the nine processes of devotional service, one's heart becomes purified, and he immediately understands his relationship to Krishna. He then revives his original quality of Krishna consciousness. Sri Krishnadas Kaviraj, the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita, says that all good qualities become manifest in the body of a Vaishnava, and that only by the presence of these good qualities can one distinguish a Vaishnava from a non-Vaishnava. He lists the following 26 qualities of a Vaishnava, and these are just some qualities. They're actually unlimited. He's very kind to everyone. He doesn't make anyone his enemy. He's truthful. He's equal to everyone. No one can find any fault in him. He's magnanimous, mild, always clean, without possessions, working for everyone's benefit. We've already mentioned that. He's very peaceful. He's always surrendered to Krishna. He has no material desires. We've mentioned that also. He's very meek, he's steady, he controls his senses, he doesn't eat more than required, he's not influenced by the Lord's illusory energy, he offers respect to everyone, he doesn't desire any respect for himself, he's very grave, he's merciful, he's friendly, he's poetic, he's expert, and he's silent. Now silent, of course, doesn't mean that you don't say anything. It means you don't say anything unnecessarily. or you don't say anything that isn't about God. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave this open instruction, especially he gave this instruction to all Indians. Bharata Bhumite Hayo Manusha Janma Jar Janma Shartha Kare Parapara Parapara. That means if you're born in India, you should understand that you've been designated as an ambassador of the spiritual world, because Paramparagat Bharatiya Samskriti, traditional Indian civilization, is by nature and essentially spiritual. I remember when I was a young boy, in those days, sometimes you could find Dhotiwala, even in America. Now you can't find them even in India. In fact, if you take a taxi from Vrindavan to the airport in Delhi, you'll pass through places with names like Central Park, Flower Valley, Orange Hill. You have nothing to do with anything godly, really. Nothing to do with anything traditionally Indian also. This is what it's become. But I used to see these people sometimes. Invariably the women would wear saris and the men sometimes would wear dhotis. And I just used to marvel. These people are looking like they're coming from some heavenly planet or something. They must be knowing so much about God, and that there must be so much wisdom that I can call from them. Little did I know that, they were here to make money. Just like their descendants now all go to Chilukuru and worship Isa Balaji, and that's how they get their H1. Because they're concentrating on their number instead of God. There's actually a sign in the temple that says, concentrate on God, not your number. The pujaris in that temple are actually very Krishna conscious. But anyway, it's a fact that those from India have this responsibility, because it's a special birth, and it's therefore it involves a special prerogative. What does the word prerogative mean? In Sanskrit, what do we call this? Prerogative? Adhikar. Adhikar means it's a right, but it's also an obligation, a responsibility that you have to perform. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has defined that responsibility further. He says, first of all, assimilate this yourself, because you can't give what you don't have. If you don't have it, you can't give it. So janma sarsa kari, make your own life fruitful, first of all. Then, then you can help other people. And then he specifies further how to do that. Whoever you see, tell that person something about Krishna. You never know how many of them are expecting that. I was expecting it, and that was 40 years ago. So, janma sartha kori kora bhava kora jari dehi kare kaha krishna upadesh amara jnani guru hai tar adesh. You become a representative of Krishna. Try to help everyone around you. If you do this, this is what Krishna wants. If you do this, then Krishna will manifest in your person. All the demigods, rather, will manifest in your person. You will manifest the qualities of Krishna as well. And you can help everyone around you. Now, in order to do this, there's a secret formula. What is that? Anybody know? What is 90% of our spiritual advancement based on? Any guess? Huh? Let's hear that. Raise your hand. Somebody should say something. Huh? Chanting. Okay. Now an incorrect answer. What else? Humility, very good answer also.
Remove the ego.
Remove the ego, we're getting very warm. Anything else?
Truthful.
Surrender, truthful. Or?
Service attitude.
Service attitude. And?
Sincerity.
Sincerity. These are good. None of them are incorrect. What I'm thinking of is satsanga. Because if you think about it, all of the activities of devotional service come through good association. Sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha, sarva shastra koi, lava matra sadhu sangha sadha siddhi hoi. If you have even a split second of association with a pure devotee, then all perfection is there available to you. All perfection. Whatever it is you want, even slight association with pure devotee will give this to you. The great poet Govindadas Kaviraj, he wrote, even though this human form of life is very rarely attained, the good quality of this human life is that in good association, you can transcend the whole thing. You can become liberated even in one life. So this is our foremost, this is our first order of business, in fact. If we want to adopt the spirit of this prayer by Prahlad Maharaj, if we want to become saintly and represent the qualities of the devas, as have been described in this verse, the first priority is to find good association and keep that good association. I learned some valuable lessons from the late Kamalakrishna Goswami. He was one of Srila Prabhupada's closest disciples. He left this world in 2002. But he said there are three things you can do if you seek this kind of satsanga, better association than you have. He said that the first and the best thing to do is learn how to better appreciate whatever association you've already been given. That means good association, not bad association. Because it's actually possible to appreciate what it is that motivates, practically speaking, anyone who practices Krishna consciousness. If you know how to mine those jewels, they're there, deep in the heart. But you have to be willing to get that deep. That's the best thing to do. Or you can understand also that since not a blade of grass waves in the wind without the sanction of the Supreme Lord, therefore there must be a reason for which we've been given the association that we already have. Association means bhakta sangha, sadhu sangha, satsangha. So learn to appreciate that. Feel grateful for that. And consider that association, the value of that association more deeply, and you'll see how valuable it is and how much you can grow through it. That's the very best thing. He said that another thing you can do, when and if that doesn't work, you can actively seek out the association that you require. Especially nowadays, we're all connected anywhere in the world, you can connect within a few seconds just by pushing buttons. And everybody's always on camera now in the modern society anyway, so there must be a way to plug into where the satsang is happening. Krishna says, wherever the devotees are glorifying Krishna, Krishna is to be found in that assembly. So we can also find them. There's one couple in Los Angeles, Southern California. We went to visit them. They're a retired couple. So they're very smart, and they are very serious about sadhu sangha. So they've got this flat screen prominently displayed in their living room in their house. But they've got it programmed such that this thing follows the morning program from one temple to another all the way around the world throughout the 24-hour day period. So they're constantly hearing either some kirtan or some class continuously, one after another. So they're constantly absorbed in transcendental sound. So that's another thing we can do. Or we can physically go. Here we're in Chicago. Maybe a few weeks ago or a month ago, we had the Sadhu Sangha retreat in North Carolina. 2,000 devotees came together just to hear and chant over the weekend without any distraction, because cell phones don't work in those mountains. So that's a very good opportunity also. This kind of thing we should do. Go visit Vrindavan. Visit anywhere, wherever the Sadhu Sangha is, that is where your advancement is. This is the point. The third thing is a little bit more difficult, but it's more central to what we've already described, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order. And this is the example shown by Srila Prabhupada as well. He wasn't satisfied that his godbrothers were fulfilling the orders of their spiritual master. For whatever reason, he wasn't satisfied. Actually, they weren't fulfilling that instruction. So he went and created the association that he wanted. If you want association of saintly people, then you can also do that. But that's a little harder, especially in the beginning. We can't expect that we're going to be very successful with that, because first we have to perfect our own self, or at least make reasonable advancement. But these are three ways that we can try to take advantage of Satsangha. But the principle we should understand, that our advancement, 90% of our advancement in spiritual life, is through the association of those whose faith is deeper than ours. And Rupa Goswami says in his Bhaktivinoda Sindhu about this, sajati ashaya smita. We should make friendships with those persons who are similar to us, sajatiya. Somebody with whom we can relate. Because a person may be so sincere and in fact very advanced, but if you can't relate with them, it's not going to be easy to really draw the inspiration that you need from that association. So find someone who is similar enough to yourself that you can relate, but who is dissimilar to yourself and that person's faith is much deeper than yours. This is the key. Advancement in spiritual life is determined by the depth of one's faith. The deeper your faith is, the more advanced you are. So faith is really everything. In the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Kapila Deva tells his mother, Devahuti, Satam Hasangan Mamadir Sandedo Bhavati Hrit Karana Rasayana Katha Tad Joshana Ashwapavar Vartmani Shuddharapir Bhaktirana Pramashiti. That means, in the association of serious devotees, somebody was saying serious is the qualification, which it is in fact. Sincere, serious devotees. In that association, when we hear something about Krishna, because it is activated or enlivened by that person, the depth of that person's realization or experience, really it's about experience, then we become enlivened in that association. And we're very quickly placed on the path of liberation. And we progress step by step from faith to sadhana sangha, to bhajana kriya, to anarjana vritti, to getting a real taste, to becoming firmly fixed in that taste, becoming addicted to that taste, and feeling some emotions for the Supreme Lord of Bhava. Bhutala bhavam agata, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Thus purified through good association, many, many persons in the past, they attained transcendental love for me. And that leads to prema bhakti. So, mad karma, bhavati hrit karma rasayana katha. The topics about Krishna in good association, they become very much enlivening. They become very sweet to the ear because it's beautiful things to hear, but also becomes very purifying to the heart. It becomes a rasayana medicine as well. So this is the key. If you want to find a good association, Krishna will always help you, because he says as much in Bhagavad Gita. Anybody know what verse I'm thinking of? Ananyash chintayanto ma ye janas paripasate teshanityabhyuktanam yogakshemapamam. Krishna says, if you're sincerely worshipping me, praying to me for advancement, then I will supply whatever you lack and I will preserve whatever you have. Tesham satatityuktanam dhritanti kipurvakam tadani bhakti yogantam idyam. I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. That means he will lead you to proper association, and that association will lead you to him. This is how it works. So, I'm going to stop here, but if anybody has any questions or any comments, we can discuss. Yes, please.
But here, like you mentioned in the beginning, that Lal Maharaj is a pure devotee, and the rest of his family members were all demons and anti Vishnu. Vishnu was their greatest enemy. So, Maharaj couldn't influence or transform the rest of his family members, including his father?
That's a very good question. He said, Aveshyatam no matir api. Api ahajiti. The Acharya is commenting on this line. They say, why is the word api used? Because he says, even we can come to devotional service if we want to. But, you know, everyone has his own, everyone is flying his own airplane, as it were. We can give you a good training in flight school, but everyone is, when you get in the cockpit and you start the admission to the airplane, then what you're going to do is your own choice, you see. Now, when we become highly conditioned as demons, or even as demigods for that matter, whatever we, however we become conditioned by the external energy Maya, it becomes very hard to extricate ourselves from that trajectory. What do I mean by trajectory? When you have a sink full of water and you pull out the stop, the water coils down the drain, correct? What's that called? It's called a vortex, a whirlpool. And when something is spinning down the drain through the force of that water, it's very hard to move against that current. You see my point? This is why Krishna says in the end of chapter 7 in the Bhagavad Gita, Yesham tvantakatam tapam jnanam punya karmana. That means those persons who are fixed in piety now and who have eradicated their sinful reactions from previous lives, they can sustain a mature commitment to pure devotional service. Other people may not. So therefore it's a disadvantage to be born in a demoniac family. And it's a disadvantage to engage in the sinful activities that result in being born in a demoniac family. So we have to monitor our own activities and our own motives, and we have to see what is the majority of my current activities, what kind of result is it going to produce in the future? That's very, very important, because we can make our lives harder if we do the wrong things. It just makes things harder. So the demons are not usually inclined for Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada said, since we're talking about Indians today, Srila Prabhupada said, if you scratch the surface of the skin on any Indian, Krishna will come out. He said. And as far as the Western devotees, he said something also very equally illuminating. He said, well, trying to clean your hearts is like trying to wash a piece of coal. No matter how hard you scrub, it still remains black. That is the difference between pious samskars and kusamskars, or demoniac cultivation. That's one answer. There may be other answers as well. But is that satisfactory? Anything else? There's a microphone coming.
If you take the example of Prahlad Maharaj again, after having a darshan of Lord Narsingadev and he became a king, not necessarily all the demons become like devotees, but still, and in Bhagavatam later it is said that Prahlad Maharaj was looking for association till he got the association of Abdul. So my question is, if you are willing, you, Krishna will provide you with the animation, with the association you are looking for.
Your question is that if a person is very sincere, regardless of what his circumstances may be, and he sincerely is praying for that kind of association, will he get it? Yes, of course, that's the whole point. That's the whole point. It may be harder to take advantage of that association. That's another thing to consider. Srila Prabhupada initiated 5,000 disciples. How many are left? You see? So samskars are very, very important. This is one reason why, perhaps, Srila Prabhupada, in the last 3 years that he was on this planet, gave roughly 80% of his instructions on the topic of dharma, specifically varnashram dharma, because the varnashram system provides a social infrastructure in which one cannot fall. He can only be elevated. Maybe not back to Godhead, but at least he's not going down. That's very, very important. Important enough that Srila Prabhupada also said in 1976 that varnashram was the remaining 50% of my mission. So this is the same principle. It's always possible by divine grace. Anything can happen through prayer, anything. Durghatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakatakat How often he does, that's another question. The usual paradigm is, you know, that one follows one. It's very, very important. Now, in Prahlad's case, this is kind of similar to the last question as well. Prahlad, although he was born in a demoniac family, Prahlad had the association of Narad Muni, even before his birth, because his mother was staying in the ashram of Muni and was hearing Krishna Katha from Narad Muni. And because the mother was hearing, therefore Prahlad was also hearing. Therefore, ladies who are pregnant or anyone who's hoping to become pregnant, this is something to keep in mind. Whatever you do, all the way from even before conception, it has a big influence on what kind of child you have. This is one of the samskaras, a subsidiary of our national dharma, called Garbhadhan samskar. It's a very, very important thing. So, Prahlad Maharaj had this association of Narad Muni from the very beginning. Therefore, he was different. Therefore, he wasn't like an ordinary being. He had been blessed. One of Srila Prabhupada's disciples also came to him and quoted this verse in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 28. He said, Krishna says that someone who is pious can come to Krishna consciousness and stick it out. But what about us? How did we end up here? And Prabhupada just looked at him very compassionately and said, I created your piety. So that's really, more and more, that's what we depend on in this world. But as I said, if we can somehow sustain paramparagata bharatiya sanskriti, or ta shishtachara, sadachara, good samskaras, then it's a great benefit to the entire human society because it makes it so much easier for everyone to take a Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, you know, I was telling them in Atlanta. Actually, in Atlanta, anybody been to Dunwoody, Georgia? Or Cumming, Georgia? Outlying areas of Atlanta. The entire city is about 90% Taliban. So, you know, people from Hyderabad, they understand. Every 10 feet, there's a Sri Lakshmi wine shop, or Balaji Wines, or, you know, Sneha Fresh Chicken, you can find every 10 feet in Hyderabad. You know, this kind of thing just makes it harder for us to. When we finally wake up and decide that it might be a good idea to cleanse our hearts a little bit, these kinds of things just make it so much harder. That's why Narottam Das Thakur says, Janyashini Abhishekhina. It's as if I've deliberately drunk poison. That's what he's talking about. The process of sense gratification in general, but sinful activity in particular, just makes it very, very hard. Because it fortifies whatever material desires we already have. It really empowers him and makes him so much stronger. Stronger means harder to overcome. You think you have a hard time now? Wait until you get one of these kinds of qualities. Is that okay?
Thank you.
Anything else? Yes.
Thank you so much for the wonderful talk, especially the things that you said about envy, which is very helpful, I think. I had one question. I've heard people say that devotees are worthy of worship. Krishna will be more pleased if we serve devotees than if we serve Krishna. So then I'm wondering that demigods are also devotees of Krishna. So why is that they say that we should not worship demigods?
Why is it that what?
Why is that we should not worship demigods if they are also devotees and devotees are worthy of worship?
Vastavna, if you want to worship demigods in the spirit that they are devotees, then that's okay. But even then you have to understand something about devotees. If we carefully read chapter 7 commentaries on Bhagavad Gita, particularly those of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and Baladeva Dabhushan, we will see that the devotees themselves are also categorized in different. There are different kinds of devotees. There are very high level devotees and very entry level devotees, we might say. So, sometimes in the Shastra we find that devotees are classified into two categories. There's Sakama devotees, devotees who also have material desires. And then there are Nishkama devotees, the devotees who have no material desires, only want Krishna, pure devotees in other words. So generally the devatas, they are Sakama devotees. They're devotees and they're great, but their greatness is a material greatness. It's just like somebody may be a sincere bhakta and he's living in Palatine, relatively decent neighborhood of Chicago. Someone else may also be a very decent, sincere devotee, but he's living in Cabrini Greens, which is not a very nice neighborhood in Chicago. So this is what we're talking about. The devatas are ordinary living entities who have been elevated to that high position of cosmic mid-level management, so to speak. But it's only on the basis of pious karma. It's not really on the basis of their spiritual advancement. And that's why we find, for example, devotees like Indra. Indra, perennially we find stories, Indra has girl trouble. Or, you know, sometimes, you know, even great sages like Durvasa Muni and Ambarish Maharaj we've been studying here in the temple, you know, they have fights and there are problems, you see. To the extent that material attachment is there, these kinds of things will happen. So the devotees that we're advised to worship are the devotees who are on a very high level beyond these things. Nishkama devotees. Rupa Goswami also puts it very nicely in his Nideshamrita. He says, we should mentally respect anyone who accepts Krishna's authority. Jai Sri Sri Kishore Kishore Ki Jai. Mentally respect any devotee, regardless of their character. We should actually bow down when we see a person who is initiated by a bona fide spiritual master and sincerely advancing on the path. But we should surrender to and faithfully serve that person whose heart is completely free from envy and who is of the character described in these verses. You see? So even in Krishna consciousness, we have to use some discrimination. And that's why we don't encourage worship of devatas. One reason. The other reason is that in most cases what passes as worship is actually more like bribery. And it's, you know, it's not really very much unlike what goes on in Indian government offices. If you need to get something done, you just find the right person to pay off and book you out. Otherwise, you know, this happened to me at the wedding, I won't say it, but when they outlawed cash last year, everybody was stuck what to do. Some more than others, of course. So, you know, this is the point. Is it clear what I'm saying?
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Anything else? Yes. The Cheshma Law.
Thanks for the wonderful talk, Prabhuji. I have a kind of confusion that I would like you to kind of elaborate on. On one side, we say not a single blade of grass can move without mercy of Krishna. And the other side, we say... Was that?
Shruti Mantra says this.
Yeah. And the other side, we say we are a living entity, we do have a free will. Mm-hmm. My question is, how free is our free will?
Our free will is conditioned by the vortex that I mentioned before of our karma that wraps us up in a particular psychology that impels us to act, or rather react, to our circumstances. What we experience from the outside, that is all determined by our karma. We cannot change that. But how we react to that we can change, but it's highly conditioned even then by our current trajectory. That's why we say that if you make your trajectory in an upward way, moving towards sattva guna or towards piety, then it becomes much easier to deal with or to react to your prarabdha karma in a positive way, in a progressive manner. Otherwise, we just get stuck in a downward spiral, and we are conditioned by that karma, and we it tends to get worse and worse and worse. So we have limited free will. Like a dog on a leash, he can only run as far as that leash is, and beyond that he cannot go. You see? We're all like that. So Brahma has a very long leash. You know, Indra has maybe a little bit less. We have a small leash, human beings, pipsqueaks. But everybody is conditioned. Like a bull with a ring through the nose, he can't do anything. You just tug on that ring, he has to do whatever you want to do. We're all like that. Is that okay? Free will is there, but you know, heavily conditioned also. Okay, anything else? No hands. So thank you very much. All praise to you for your time.